Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Voyager actor who, from 2001 until 2004, also directed seven episodes of the teen drama Dawson's Creek, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, your favorite forever ensign, Garrett Wong. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/the Delta Flyers. You won't regret it. Sign up to be a patron.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All right, Dawson's Creek.
Oh,
those are fond memories.
Very fond memories, yes.
North Carolina was the location of the shooting of Dawson's Creek, right?
Dawson's Creek. So, yeah. So here's the thing about Dawson's. I'll make a very long, complicated story very short.
Okay.
The producer, Greg Prange, had produced a show in 1992 I did in Jamaica called Going to Extremes.
Yes.
And it's the place where I first began to shadow and learn about TV directing.
Oh, you've never told me that. That happened on Going to Extremes.
It happened on Going to
Jamaica.
I was in Jamaica. And I said to Greg Prange, the producer, I said, I want to learn about this whole TV directing thing.
Sure.
Like if we're here, if this show is a hit and we're running for years here in Jamaica, I'd like to direct some of these episodes. So he was great, super supportive. And the show got canceled after a year. So I never directed. Cut to 10 years later, we're finishing up Voyager. And I directed a few episodes of Voyager. I had directed a couple shorts, including a short called The Battery that Joshua Jackson had done for me.
That's right.
And Josh was now on Dawson's Creek, and I knew Greg Prange was on Dawson's Creek. So I sent my
Greg
short
was the
film.
Showrunner? Greg was the showrunner?
He was like the he was like my job, like
okay.
the producing director, executive producer, on location, kind of running the show on location.
Yeah.
And Greg,
you sent your reel to him, right?
I sent my short film, just The Battery, with Josh Jackson. I said, hey, I thought you'd be interested because, you know, Josh is on Dawson's Creek with you and he did my short and I'm directing and you got me started. Thanks so much. And he wrote me back or called me back and he's like, this is so good. And you would be perfect. Like, I can't believe how far you've come since 1992 when I first met you and you've directed some shows. We'd love to have you do an episode. Come do an episode. So it was just, it was like full circle.
How did you feel when he told you, when you read that, that I want you to come and direct one of our episodes?
What it just was felt like the perfect fit. Like I'm coming full circle back to Greg Prange, who got me started. And Josh Jackson is there. And Josh did my short for free, shot for 5 days for free.
Right.
And was such a great guy. So it, and it was in North Carolina where I was born and where my family was. My father lived 45 minutes from Wilmington. Everything about it was perfect. So I went, it went great. They invited me to do a bunch more episodes the last two seasons. I guess I did seven. That's what you said, right?
Yeah.
And I was there a lot. It was great. It was just, it was perfect. My family, you know, my grandmother could come. My dad, he was an extra in a few episodes. It was just, it was awesome. I loved doing that show.
You know how you said you felt more comfortable on sacred ground than on your second episode that you directed?
Yeah.
Remember that? Okay.
Yeah.
So your first episode of Dawson's Creek, were you even more comfortable than when you were directing Sacred Ground? You were even more so.
Yeah.
Okay. So that would probably, that first episode of Dawson's was probably your most relaxed and least nervous of all the new shows that you had directed.
It was one of my, I wasn't, I was very comfortable around there with Greg and everybody.
Greg was there. Josh was there.
Yeah.
They wanted you there. You didn't really have to do a song and dance to pitch them. They saw your battery and they were like, hey, let's have him here. So Gosh, I wish I would have been there to come.
It was
visit
fun.
You. Yeah.
It was, city, a fun, it was
you
a
were
great,
in Raleigh?
Wilmington, North,
excuse me. Wilmington.
Right on the beach in Wilmington. Beautiful beach. Yeah, it was great. Good times.
Okay.
Good
All right.
times.
All right. So let's talk about this episode, Imperfection.
Okay.
That's the name of it. So let's go watch this episode.
Let's
and we'll be right back. Yeah, with our recap and discussion of Imperfection. For all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. All right, we're back from watching Imperfection.
Yes, we are. We
I
are
was
back.
Right about the director, but then again, that's the odds-on favorite anyway. So
yeah. David Livingston directed. I'm just going to go out on a limb and jump right into this. I don't think this was David's best directing. I don't think this was Voyager's best episode. This is definitely not one of my favorite episodes.
Wow.
No, not even close. Like, this is a, I don't
know.
Well,
you know, we'll get into it. Let's
get into the body of it
because I'm on the opposite camp now.
What?
I'm not saying this is one of the best, but I'm definitely not saying this is where you're at.
I'm not there. I was just like,
this sounds like your rating is going to be like a sixer or maybe less than six. So
we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. But okay. Let's start off with our poetry synopsis. Let's keep an open mind right now.
Yeah, let's stay creative and artistic and positive.
Let's not be negative.
Okay.
Let's start off with a positive thing.
Okay.
Because there, you know, you will know, or you do agree with me.
Yeah.
There are going to be fans out there that this is their favorite ep.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Well,
so right
look,
off the bat,
I
don't
am
want them
the one
thinking,
who starred in Threshold.
Yeah, but Threshold's not again.
Everybody makes fun of and says like.
It's only the ending that is weird. Nothing else is messed up with that. It's a good episode. So
don't
knock yourself for that.
That people hate it, but I also respectfully disagree.
Okay, fine.
On this particular episode, Imperfection, there probably are people who love it.
Yes.
I respectfully disagree.
Okay,
this
fine.
Is not my
All right.
favorite. Okay, here
here's
we go.
Here's my
art.
Haiku.
Art.
Here's my haiku for Imperfection.
Okay.
Seven cannot sleep. Cortical node malfunction. Echeb donates node. Now I have an alternate ending. So
yes.
Let me read this one. Seven cannot sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Cortical node malfunction. Doctor yells a lot. That's my...
He doesn't yell as much as other episodes.
But there's multiple... No, you're right. Yes. He doesn't yell as high. The volume is not as great as some of the other ones, but there's multiple scenes where he yells. So that together becomes the doctor yells a lot. Because he does. He yells with Janeway. He yells with Seven. He yells with each. He yells at everybody. It's almost as if this is the episode where he woke up on the wrong side of the bed. In my opinion.
Yeah, and it's to like, defend him,
yes,
I think this is an episode, if I were not familiar with Star Trek and tuned in to an Echeb 7 scene, for example, of two Borg emotionless, bland performances, I would flip the channel because I would, now if I turned into a scene where the doctor's yelling, I'd be like, oh, there's some drama going on. So I appreciate the doctor trying to bring some emotion to this. This episode.
So if I was a person who'd never seen Star Trek before and I turned on this episode, I would think the doctor is human and not a program. That's my answer to that. So it's just, he's way too emotional in this one. And it's just like, what is happening?
Yeah.
But you know, you're arguing the other way.
I was begging for some emotion.
You
in
wanted
this episode,
emotion.
Cause I felt like this
All right.
was
well, maybe he adds, maybe
oddly
it's necessary.
Lacking in emotion, even though this is the episode where Seven creates tears more than once, but I didn't feel it. It didn't do anything for me. Anyway,
okay, Robbie, just give me that.
Here we
go.
Come on. Limerick time. The Borg kids left and Seven made a tear, but there seems to be a problem with her Borg gear. Seven's life is at stake. Plans to save her end in heartbreak. But Echeb saves her life as a donor volunteer.
Nice. See, that's a nice, positive, well done.
Yes, it is. It's the end of my positivity.
Okay. Let's just jump right into this.
Let's talk about the writers first.
Yes.
We've got Teleplay by Charlton Eastlake. Eastlake.
That sounds like Thurston Howell's cousin. Yeah. Thurston Howell from, Gilligan's Island. He sounds like a society well-to-do.
Yes. Teleplay by Charlton Eastlake and Bob Doherty, Robert Doherty.
Yeah, we love Robert Doherty. At least I love Robert Doherty.
Yes, agreed. Charlton Eastlake, since he's never written on or since on our show, I'm going to tell you his first writing job was on the TV series The Equalizer.
Ooh!
In the late 1980s, 85 to 89, starring Edward Woodward, the original Equalizer.
I remember the show.
I remember it too, because it was one of, back in the 80s, there wasn't much TV in New York City when I lived there. That was Carlton Eastlake's first writing job. Wow. Bob Doherty, we've talked about. Andre Bermanis came up with this story.
Andre, that's our science consultant. And I do remember
when
I received this script, I saw that, that he was credited with the story. And I thought, whoa, good for him.
Yeah.
Because really, he's the guy that the writers call up and say, yeah, so in this line of technobabble, does this make sense?
He was the science guy.
Yeah, he just made sure. Yeah, he's a consultant.
Yeah.
Right. So good for him. Good for
guest stars, we have Manu back. Manu as Icheb. We have Marley McLean as Mazzotti saying her goodbyes, which was very sad.
Very sad.
We have Debbie Gratton, who's playing the Wysanti mom that's taking the twins, Kurt and Cody, Wetherill, Azon and Rebbe, taking the twins and Mazzotti off the ship. Debbie Gratton, her first job was in 1997, a TV movie called Crowned and Dangerous.
What?
Yeah.
Crowned and Dangerous?
I think it was some kind of royal family or royal thing. I don't know. I have no idea. Crowned and Dangerous. We also have one other guest star, Michael McFaul, playing the salvage alien, who I thought the salvage aliens were like Kazon, but we'll get
the lead guy is Kazon with a haircut. And then the guys behind him, one of them didn't look very Kazon. It looked like he was completely bald, like a different alien, maybe.
I don't know. Michael McFaul's the actor playing that alien. It's one scene.
Yeah.
He made his acting debut in 1989. In the action film Defector, Karate Kickboxer.
Oh, right on. Nice. Yeah. Okay.
That's our guest stars.
Cool.
Let's get into it.
All right.
Captain's log.
Yeah.
54129.4. It's a bittersweet day for the crew of the USS Voyager. We found a home for some of our most precious cargo.
Exterior space shot, a very cool looking alien ship.
Yeah.
Next to Voyager.
Yeah.
And then at the end of that captain's log, we are now in the transporter room.
Yep.
Seven, Janeway, and Icheb are there to say goodbye to the Borg kids. Why are just those people there to say goodbye? Why isn't everyone there to say goodbye to these Borg kids?
Know.
I mean, I think all the main players should have been there. And essentially, I was confused right off the bat, because in this goodbye, I thought Mazzotti says, on Mazzotti, it's customary not to say goodbye, but I think I prefer the human way. I thought that she was referring to the planet that Rezi and Azon was from, was the same name as her first name. But then
Wysanti.
Right? Well, I had to do the English subtitles to be able to see what the heck was said. I didn't hear Wysanti. I heard Mazzotti. I was like, what? Mm-hmm. The planet is Mazzotti, but no, it's Mazzanti. Okay, so it's a goodbye to the kids. And
it is a goodbye. Mazzotti wants to do the human goodbye, which is a hug, and there's a sweet moment.
There is.
Very sweet moment of a hug that lasts a little extra long. And then as they beam out, Janeway puts her arm around Seven. So my first thought was like, oh yeah, in the last episode, Seven, that we saw.
Yeah.
By the way, the last episode we saw was not the episode that shot before this. This episode was aired out of order.
Oh.
I found out, but we'll get to that.
Okay.
Anyway, the last episode we saw was Seven in the virtual world learning that she had romantic feeling for someone. So she's really getting in touch with her humanity, right? That was...
Correct.
That was Unimatrix Zero Part 2.
Yes.
So now she is saying goodbye and Janeway's putting her arm around her. And I was thinking, oh, she's getting more in touch with her feelings. She's going to have feelings, which we go out in the hall.
Yeah.
And she's got a tear. So there's a walk and talk with Seven and Icheb.
Yeah, it starts off with Seven saying she wants to break down the extra alcoves. Icheb thinks it's a little too quick. You know, it's too soon for that. And she says, well, you know, you're just having an emotional reaction to the fact that they're leaving, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then that's when Icheb sees a single tear drop. What side of the face was that? I think it was her left side of her face. It just kind of came down. And he's like, you're crying. And Seven says, oh, no. No, that's just my ocular implant. It's malfunctioning.
And I thought covering. She was lying because she was having feelings. I thought,
I thought in that moment,
I was like, well, she just came off of this episode where she had feelings in Unimatrix. Yeah. She doesn't even know what feelings feel like yet. So she's had was where I went. But we go to sick bay.
I believe her.
We go to sick bay. Doctor's explaining, you know, crying is normal. And he talks about when he saw Pacini's Tosca, he cried for the first time. And then he admits, well, yes, Torres enhanced my subroutine so I could cry and have feelings. And Seven says, well, that you may have had feelings, but I did not have any feelings. Like, there's a glitch in my cortical implants because I wasn't feeling.
She said she didn't say she wasn't feeling anything. She said I had my emotions under control. Is what she said.
Totally control.
I was under control. Yeah, I'm fine. Mm-hmm.
So the doctor looks a little deeper and he does find you're right. Actually, there is a glitch in your cortical implants.
Correct.
And I found this scene to be odd. This whole scene was a winner.
Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which required the doctor to sort of move around from the cart and randomly move around behind her.
And it looked awkward, didn't it?
He was talking to the back of her head for half the scene. I'm like, nobody would do this, but obviously, and there's a number of these shots in this episode where I was like, I didn't know if David was trying to make his days to, you know, to lose his reputation that he takes too long. Cause there were a lot of wonders that I felt may have, could have used some coverage.
I agree with you. And I may have the answer to that. There was a time, and it was late in our filming schedule. So I'm guessing it was season 7 when he was directing and he was deathly ill. And I remember when I went up to say hi to him to shake his hand, he's, oh, no, don't touch me. Don't touch me. I'm so sick. I'm really sick, Garrett. Just don't, back up. So I feel like maybe if he was that under the weather, he was like, look, I don't have time to, let me just get through this episode. I need to go home right now. Cause he looked like he had, like he was on his deathbed, but he was still there because he had to direct, you know, he couldn't call in sick.
I will admit that's how this episode felt a little bit.
Okay.
And I don't know. It seemed out of character.
Direction, for what we're used to.
For what we're used to with David.
Yeah.
This one seemed different in some significant way. And this was one of those scenes where I was like, it's all one shot. And the doctor's moving around behind her, talking to the back of her head, and she's not looking behind her. And just seemed strange.
Yeah.
Seems strange. Anyway, they talk about her cortical implants, this glitch. She says, yes, she has had some headaches.
Yeah.
And the doctor says, well, I'll make a report. I'll tell the captain and put that in the report. And she goes, no.
Yeah.
Don't tell the captain anything. Yeah. I want to keep this confidential. And he says, okay, all right. I won't say anything.
Doctor patient confidentiality. Mm-hmm. That's what she wants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a flyby.
Flyby.
Of Voyager.
You know are these flybys basically, they're only inserted when they're trying to figure out how much time they need to make the episode exactly it. And they'll throw in like,
It's funny you bring that
flybys.
Up.
Is that how it works?
Because, well, it's a transition for one thing to go from one place to another.
Yeah.
But it's funny you say that because when David does all these wonders where there's no coverage, it doesn't allow them editorially to add time or take away time. So if the episode was a little short, they may have added some of these flybys because there's a lot of them in this episode.
There's excessive flybys in this episode. So we are slowly coming to, we're like sleuths right now, you know, we're figuring out
everything. What was going on here.
What happened? Yes. Okay. Astrometrics lab. Icheb is looking at the screen and I had to freeze it to see what the heck was on there. And at the very top, you can read or you can make out Starfleet Academy. So you see that much. So he's looking at this. We're not sure what it is. Seven shows up and he quickly hides the screen. Mm-hmm. And Icheb makes this announcement. He says he wants to work on the bridge. And Seven's like, well, you don't have the training for that. He's like, no, that's fine. I would like to take the entrance exam for Starfleet Academy. Yes. And I would like to maybe be trained by Tuvok since he was an instructor at the Academy. So he has this grandiose plan for mm-hmm. himself, very ambitious. And Seven even acknowledges that in a prideful way. And she's, you know, she's like, wow, very ambitious of you. And he needs a letter of recommendation from Captain Janeway. So Seven says she will speak to Janeway about this. But right about this time, some weird thing happens with her hand where it
bubbles
starts,
up.
Yeah, it bubbles. It looks like mm-hmm. something's going on. Like something.
Her skin's like the camera. Again, yeah. a oneer. Each up's mm-hmm. behind her. She's yeah. in the foreground.
Yep.
It tilts down to her hand for a second, yep. comes up. So there's no edits yep. here. There's no cut to her nope. looking at her hand,
correct.
Push in on the hand.
Yeah.
You know, there's none nothing of that like coverage. That.
No.
Mm-mm. But she hides her bubbly yeah. hand and heads.
She dismisses cargo bay. Herself. Yeah. yeah. She gets out of there.
Yep. Doesn't tell Ichip. So she's nope. hiding some stuff.
Already off the bat.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We go to cargo bay and there's a crane shot looking from like the side of cargo bay where the door is.
Yes.
And she walks in underneath and then the camera sort of follows her as she gets in her alcove and pushes right. in on her face.
Yep.
I just want to make a comment here.
Go ahead.
That usually when a character is entering a shot, the rule is typically that you want the actor to be coming closer, that you want to see their face and you want them coming toward you. Action yeah. coming toward you is mm-hmm. more typical. Mm-hmm. Action underneath and chasing or following going away from you is not as typical.
Right.
And I notice a few times in this episode, David was behind the actors
yeah.
as they walked away. And I don't know why he made that choice because it's unusual. He didn't yeah. just make it once. He made it three or four or five times.
Right. Again, so, I think he was deathly ill and he had to go home. Suppose
maybe, that. maybe. Yeah. yeah, but that crane shot is unusual. She's walking mm-hmm. away from us. So we don't see her face. We don't get any emotion or right. storytelling on her face.
Not a thing.
But she goes in and then turns around and now we see her face. And she tells the computer to activate the regeneration. And the computer right. says, you're no longer compatible.
Yes. Yeah. Interface is not compatible. Yeah.
She thinks
it's malfunctioning, the alcove mm-hmm. itself. So she runs a diagnostic on the alcove and it comes back absolutely fine. There's no issues with the alcove. It mm-hmm. is actually her cortical node, which is mm-hmm. malfunctioning, which is mm-hmm. a huge deal if you're a Borg, because that's the kind of the end of the line. If your cortical node goes out, you're yeah. done. So
yeah.
The next shot is in the mess hall. Mm-hmm. Seven is alone and she has what looks like glasses or empty glasses of milk. And so immediately you're thinking it's a white liquid. So you're thinking it's possibly milk. Yeah. You know,
you don't know that until later.
Really? I felt like she couldn't sleep. So she was drinking warm milk, you know, the old Western way of trying to fall asleep. I thought that's what she was doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because we don't learn it's a supplement until later when Neelix arrives and he asks her, what's all that? And she says, oh, nutritional supplements. And he says, you know what? I'll make you a Talaxian omelet. That's what you need, a Talaxian omelet. And right when that happens, she hits the deck. I mean, she's on the ground and she's not moving. He runs over to her. She starts having a seizure. And this is my issue. I feel like, yes, you can pass out and your eyes are closed. But once you have the seizure, it would have been more effective if her eyes sprung open and she started having the seizure, because they were closed and it kind of pulled me out. It looked strange.
Yeah. Her seizure was weird. Also, when she says he offers the omelet, and she says, no, I'm fine. I'm going to go back to cargo bay or something. And she starts walking and I heard these squishy sounds. Did you hear them?
No.
It was like,
she
walked, that's what stopped her. And then she falls down to the ground. Now, I guess the squishy sounds were the nanoprobes breaking
doing
through
stuff?
Her skin.
Oh, I didn't even catch that. Okay.
But the squishy sounds were so... They were just so gross. It was like, what are those squishy sounds? I had to go back and re-listen to it. It was it was just ew.
And again, if I am correct in my assumption that this was the episode where Livingston was deathly ill, that would also kind of explain why this blocking wasn't really refined, you know, in terms of how she's going to have this seizure, because it just looked it looked ludicrous. It didn't really look, it just bothered me. It pulled me out. But that's on the director though. Am I right? I mean, if you're watching this, you'd be like, hey, let's try this. You know, let's
I didn't buy the convulsions. I didn't buy the squishy sound was gross. I don't know all of it, but she's in trouble and the nanoprobes break through her skin by her cheek and on her hand. She's got some Neelix looks at. So he calls sick bay, medical emergency. We go into sick bay. She's got more of these nanoprobes breaking through her skin now.
Yeah.
Her body is rejecting her implants.
Implants. They're all starting to shut down.
And the doctor says there's a glitch in her cortical node. It's destabilizing. And while he's going through all this doctory stuff, I kept watching Kate because...
Oh, me too.
Kate was so funny.
I would give so much money to know everything that she was thinking about. At one point, I was thinking... she was thinking... Am I supposed to pick up my sons later today? I mean, I was thinking that she was thinking about errands at one point.
I don't know what she was thinking of.
She was all over the place.
Funny.
And then she starts fidgeting with her nails. She never does this on the show. She starts doing that. And it's almost as if she didn't know that the camera was on her. Like she thought maybe it was a one-er on Bob and not a two-shot because... You've got to agree with me. I'm not sure what she was thinking,
but she had some secret thoughts that were making her behave funny. And I thought it was funny. It made me laugh. I had to watch it a couple times.
Yeah, I did too. I was glued on her, transfixed. But it honestly looked like she was waiting for her coverage and that she was there just to give lines for Bob and for Jerry.
And I don't know if what I didn't like about this episode was the story, the writing, or combination of performances, or the direction. It was kind of all of the above.
Okay.
But the whole idea that we'll get to later, where the captain has this emotional investment in Seven that is above and beyond any other character, but yet it didn't seem consistent. Like in this scene, she seemed... to be trying to avoid this moment.
And she seemed quite distracted.
Distracted and almost like playing it a little light comedy in some moments. It didn't track for me that the story we're ultimately going to tell is Janeway's willing to like fly by herself into a book. It just didn't, none of it made sense.
Okay. But anyway. I know your criticisms. You started them from the very first breath that came out of your mouth. But I'm going to say right now, to erase all of those, if everyone was to have acted to their best ability, if Janeway was engaged in that scene and she was not distracted, if everything fell, all the chips fell correctly, I think you would have rated this. You would have felt this was a good episode. I do believe that. You know, I
think there's a version of this episode that could have gotten a higher rating.
Thank
from
you.
Me,
That's all I want to hear. That's all I want.
But still, I wouldn't be a high rating. Okay. But anyway, Seven says, that her Borg implants are being rejected one by one. But she says that her parts will adapt. Like the doctor has, made adaptations before. She'll just adapt. Right. And doctor says, I don't think I can do it this time. Yeah. Not this time.
Yeah.
This is your cortical node. It's not going to work. And so Janeway ends up sending the doctor away.
Because she wants to talk to her alone.
Privately.
Yeah.
She says, what would the Borg have done if this was happening in the when you were in the collective? And she said, well, they would just replace the node.
Yeah. It's too complex to fix the node. Exactly. And that gives Janeway an idea. You see a little light bulb pop on in her head.
Bing.
Yep. And we're back on the bridge. Janeway asks Harry. Now, here we go. This is the only scene that Harry Kim is in, I think, in the entire episode. Yes. Yeah. So I felt like this was the episode where I got so much time off. I was able to go to Vegas early. So I was happy probably. So
did you notice, by the way?
Yeah,
I noticed. So this is an early episode in season 7, which meant we were shooting probably in July-ish. Mm. Everybody looked tan to me. Like you can see that it's summer. Bob had color. He had a tan.
Wow.
Jerry had a little more color.
Wow.
I did notice people... There was summer going on during
this. Look at this. Robbie, you are a super sleuth when it comes to this episode. Yeah. Look at all these little things you've caught. I did not hear the squishy sounds. I didn't notice some people being more tan. No. Yeah. Good for you.
I also liked in the scene when she comes in. Yeah, she asks Harry to look for the Borg debris field that
we passed 6 or 7 days ago. Yeah.
So. Yeah. Harry says, yes, ma'am. Like Tom. I loved your yes, ma'am. I finally, Tom is wearing off on everybody.
So it shades of Tom Paris in that delivery, didn't it?
Chakotay turns around and says, "Hey, it's not normal that we're looking for the Borg." He goes, "What's up?" And I was like, "Chakotay goes, what's up? Like, are we in the 1970s sitcom? What is happening?
I wanted more colloquial dialogue. What's up? So I'm okay. I'm good with that. Hey, what's up,
Catherine? What's up? I don't know. I didn't like it. She tells him funny. She wants to find this replacement part for Seven.
And she's going to do this on her own.
She's going to do it on her own,
which is hilarious.
Tuvok's like, the Borg return to salvage damaged cubes. Like, the Borg could show up.
They'll make
there.
A trip back there. They need be. Yeah.
And she says, "Well, I'm going to take the flyer, the Delta flyer alone." Now, pause for a minute.
Yes.
In Unimatrix Zero Part One,
we know
the Delta flyer is destroyed.
I know. So
now here's where I went, something's up. So I did a little research.
Yeah.
This episode was not filmed till after the next two episodes, but they moved it up.
Okay.
In the airing order.
Okay.
So sometime in the next two episodes, Tom's going to fix the Delta flyer.
Right. It got fixed too quickly, basically. Right.
They didn't even talk about it because it was supposed to, this episode should have aired after the next two when we do talk about it.
Right.
But because they moved the order up, the other thing I found out that happens, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Is that Tom and B'Elanna get married. And you will see later on in an insert in the surgery scene when Tom is helping that Tom has a wedding ring on.
Whoa.
So this episode is way out of order.
So out of order. But because you jump up and say, "Well, the Delta Flyer was blown to bits last time you took it," it made sense for the audience. They didn't think twice.
It didn't for me. I was like, "What?" No, he's got to fix it. That's a whole beat that we skipped, which will happen in the next couple episodes. So will a wedding, I guess. Yeah. Because Tom had a wedding ring on.
You are so, Sherlock Holmes today.
Here's the other thing that bugged me about this. I have a feeling, I don't know what the next two episodes are, but I have a feeling that the network or whoever said, "Okay, we're back in season seven. We had a big Borg episode of the Borg Queen, and Seven of Nine is a big seller for us. Let's move that Seven episode up a couple so that we start season seven with a couple strong Borg episodes in a row."
Maybe.
And they just purely did it because it's a Seven episode. They didn't care that the Delta Flyer was destroyed. They didn't care that we're skipping a wedding. They didn't care. They're just like, put the Borg up earlier because that's more important than these other character stories. And that bugged me that they were willing to throw all that continuity out just to move up some, you know, thinking that, well, if it's Borg, it must be a good episode because this is not a good episode. It's not.
Okay.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So do you think there's no possible way that you could have possibly left your own wedding ring on and filmed that way by mistake?
For an insert, they would have caught it. No.
Okay, fine. You're like, no. That never would have happened.
No.
Wow.
B'Elanna and Tom have to get married in the next couple episodes.
Fine.
And they just flipped episodes and didn't
right
care.
That.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Bad choices.
This is going to be the lowest rating you've given anything, isn't it?
Maybe.
Oh my gosh. All right, we're on the We're
in the hallway. So Tom and Tuvok and Chakotay are like, you can't go by yourself. She goes, okay, you guys are with me. We go out to the hall.
Along. Yes.
Tuvok and Tom are heading to the shuttle. Icheb stops her. Hey, Captain, can I talk to you?
Yeah.
Did you make a decision on my request to join Starfleet Academy?
Yeah.
And take the exams? And she's like, you know
clueless. She didn't even know. She's like,
I don't even know what you're talking about, but Seven is not well and we've got to take care of her. Yeah. And she fills him in. Her cortical node is failing and being rejected.
And he knows right off the bat. He's like, she's going to die.
He's going to die
right off the bat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And he says he has expertise with Borg technology. He wants to go with Janeway on this away mission. And Janeway says, no way.
Nope.
No.
Okay. So then they head off. We cut to the hallway. Icheb's walking in
to sick bay.
Yes. And again, cameras following the actor, in front of the actor.
Yes, yes, yes.
He goes into sick bay.
Yeah, she's there.
Yeah. She starts getting angry with him.
That's right. She starts having this angry emotional.
It's like, what are you doing here? You shouldn't be here. Go back to Astrometrics. Get out of here. The doctor says, hey, Icheb, come on in here with me. Yes. Step in my office.
Yeah.
So Icheb goes in and he says, look, she's angry. It's natural when you've got a diagnosis like this. And of course it is.
Well, he thinks she's angry at him. And so he says, she's not angry at you. She's just angry.
She's just angry. She's got to deal with this in her own way.
Yeah.
And give her time. And he says, when she's ready, you'll be the first call I make. I'll call you, Icheb, and let you know.
Yeah.
Next, we're out in space. The Delta Flyer has a cool shot flying into this Borg debris, which was very cool. I thought it felt very 3D, like the way the camera moved. It was a good shot. But again, the Delta Flyer was destroyed last episode. How did this happen?
It got built so quickly. It was clearly a very fast rebuild. Tuvok has located a section that contains the bodies of 37 drones. They died from an explosion, so most of the bodies are not intact, but there's a few that are.
Tuvok says, approximately 37 bodies of drones. Paris goes, well, that doesn't sound approximate to me. You just named 37. It was an odd line from Paris. It was supposed to be, I guess, comedic or sarcastic. I just don't know how you deliver that joke any less awkwardly. It wasn't as funny. It was not.
It just didn't sound like something that would have come out of Paris's mouth.
It was odd sarcasm.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Well, yes. Janeway does want Tom Paris to run continuous scans for any Borg vessels that end up, you know, showing up unannounced to the salvage area.
Yeah.
And Tuvok and Janeway beam to the debris.
Yep. They head to the back. We don't see them beam because we see.
That's right. They go to the back, the Borg, then they beam.
On the Borg ship, suddenly they appear. Janeway and Tuvok are searching for these dead drones. It was cool shots, actually.
Yep.
This felt like classic David Livingston, this walk down the down the hallway. They do find one under some debris, no apparent damage to the cortical node. So Janeway starts to do a little autopsy surgery. I made a note, that is not Kate's hands in the inserts. It was someone else's. But she extracts this glowing node, which was kind of cool. And then Paris calls and says, hey, you've got company. And they ask to get beamed out. Paris doesn't respond. Scary. Three aliens show up. I wrote
three humanoids? Yeah, three humanoids beam in, claiming the debris field belongs to them.
But are they Kazons?
Well, the first guy was. I felt like he was Kazon with a
haircut. I feel like we've left the Kazon like a few hundred light years back. How are the Kazons still here? Like they've been gone.
This Kazon traveled far west. Like this is the one that made it out to California. You know,
This is the
Donner Party survivor, basically.
It was weird to see Kazon again and not really identify them as Kazon. It was just strange. But anyway, bad guys show up. Mm-hmm. Hey, this is our debris field.
Yeah.
This is our salvage.
Yep.
He says this is his.
She grabs him in a weird way.
Well, he shoves her out of the way to go reach for something. And then she grabs him and
puts him in a headlock.
Like the laser scalpel to his neck.
Yeah.
And that's when he kind of throws her back. We have a little bit quick fight here.
A scuffle ensues.
I felt like it was all done a little slow motion, like not literally slow motion, but like the acting of this. All of these beats were like slowly pulling my rifle up, Yeah. Nobody was going very fast.
No.
I don't know. It was like a choreographed fight
in slow-mo is what it was.
It was not great.
But they are beamed out.
Tuvok is injured, by the way.
Yeah, I was going to say they're beamed out, but not before Tuvok is shot.
He gets shot.
Kind of falls back. Yeah. But the beam out, it doesn't really include their equipment, but yet they do show up with one box and one phaser rifle. So it was kind of like, I didn't understand what was happening. It was sloppy. Yes, agreed. We're in the cockpit back at the Delta Flyer. There's a cool ship of the alien ship firing at the Delta Flyer with Tom Paris in the foreground. The angle is from behind Tom, and we see that nice visual right there.
That nice moon roof. Yeah, basically a space chase with Paris looking through the moon roof.
Yes.
And, you know, I think he did a nice design on the Delta Flyer.
This is good visibility. This is the episode where Elon Musk was watching this episode and he thought, you know what? When I design my Tesla, I'm going to put a
glass roof.
Like it's just going to go just like Tom Paris's Delta Flyer. And that's, you know, I think he owes you royalties on that.
Well, Tom's flying away here. Big space chase going on.
Yeah.
They beam back in and he says to Janeway, I need you a tactical.
Oh, yes.
And she responds,
You say, I need you a tactical. When I bring us around, target their engine core. And Janeway goes, aye, sir. It was almost like she enjoyed it. It was weird. Yeah. It was like, whoa, look at that.
I feel like in this moment, I was like, wait, did I get, I just got promoted to lieutenant last episode.
Yeah, and maybe now you're an admiral.
I'm an admiral all of a sudden. That's what I take away from this.
Yeah. Or the takeaway is you're the only person of lieutenant rank to actually order a captain to do something.
Yeah.
And she does it. She fires and disables their ship. And you say, good shot.
Yeah. Nice shot. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're breaking off pursuit. So there you go. Mm-hmm. A little Janeway Paris magic there.
Yeah.
Little connection there.
There's a little shipping going on in there.
Little something.
Maybe.
Yeah, PJ. Oh, pajamas. Mm-hmm. Paris Janeway, pajamas. So, okay. We're now in sick bay.
And go to sick bay.
The doctor's in his office. Mm-hmm. Right? He noticed Seven is tinkering at a console, doing some work. He walks over.
He's there. He hears the beeping. He looks behind him and she's like, beep, 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 beep. And he like turns back and rolls his eyes.
He does an eye roll.
And a sigh.
The doctor has a...
He's like...
Such an advanced program. Eye rolls, size, everything. He walks over and he asks, what are you doing? She says, I'm implementing a new filing system since the old one was inefficient. So she's doing spring cleaning is what she's doing. And she's dying. But
Busy work.
But she wants to do that. So she's not thinking about the death is what it is. I understand. And he tells her, you know, you should be in bed. Neelix shows up, flowers, caddis cotton board. Doctor says, you know what? She just wants to be alone. And then... were they doing some type of thing where they're trying to get her to get out
like
of her
It was like a vaudeville bit. Yes.
It was.
Because the doctor goes, you shouldn't play her now while she's sick because
that's an unfair advantage or whatever.
Unfair advantage. You'll just beat her so easily.
Right.
And then, of course, that gets to her ego.
Yeah.
Doctor turns to walk them out and they're walking towards the door and she says, green. And they stop and they both start walking back together.
Yeah. Vaudeville style.
It was a vaudeville act. It was hilarious. the unison walking, the vaudeville timing was great. She says, green. I prefer the green pieces. You'll play with red. So it worked.
Yeah.
And then Janeway calls and says she's got this cortical gnome. And another flyby to fill time here. We come back to what looks like sick bay and a surgery table. Yeah.
Seven's on the clamshell bed. The new node is being put into her cortical.
And it's node. Like a round hole on her forehead.
I was confused because when we were guessing about the synopsis of this episode in the intro for our Patreon patrons, I didn't realize because I was saying, well, is he going to give her his liver or is he going to give her one of his implant or is that, but cortical node is not the implant, the ocular or any of the other implants. It's
like the brain.
It's in their head. So
this surgery to me felt like, so Tom is there assisting, they're doing this cortical node replacement. It felt like a heart transplant.
Yes.
It felt just like a metaphor for a heart transplant. They're
Sure.
You know, because he talks about when he's doing this, you know, transfer her cortical functioned, you know, offline or something. When I've directed heart transplant scenes, and so I know a little about that. When a heart transplant happens, nice. the patient goes on bypass because they don't have a heart. When you take their heart out to put the new heart in, you have to keep the blood circulating. So you put them on, you know, a bypass machine. So the blood is actually being pumped by a machine.
Right.
This felt like a heart transplant metaphor. As soon as I thought of that, I was like, well, heart transplants are serious surgeries.
Yeah.
And Tom's there assisting, not in a smock, not in a...
You're wearing your Starfleet uniform.
What?
It's I'm like in my Starfleet uniform. The doctor saw you walking past. Hey, Tom, come over here. You're like, yeah, what? Can you assist? Sure.
Yeah.
You're right.
And I guess the doctor is a hologram. He doesn't need all of that because he's not got organic, biological, you know, dangers. Mm-hmm. But Tom should have had it.
You should have been in scrubs. Yeah.
It just didn't feel as...
serious as
a heart transplant scene would be. And that's basically what they're doing. So,
but then again, we do realize as the note is being rejected, she goes through anaphylactic shock and the doctor ends simulation. This is when the audience realizes this is not the real deal. And maybe that's why you're not wearing scrubs, because you're in the simulation and you're trying to see.
Spoiler alert, later on, we're going to do it for real. And it's no different. There's no scrubs. There's nothing. So
that's true.
I felt it in the simulation. I felt it. And then later on, they don't fix it. So
Janeway wants to run another simulation. Paris says they've run 12 already. Will the 13th be lucky? Probably not. The doctor says that the salvage node has been inactive for too long. And Janeway says, guess what? We will find one that hasn't been inactive for too long. Yeah. And now they leave sick bay and they have this intense scene in the corridor. The doctor says a note from a dead drone won't work no matter where you find it from. And she says, okay, well, we have infiltrated cubes before. The doctor immediately understands what's going on. He says, you're suggesting ending one life to save another? And that's when Janeway responds with, I'm not giving up on her. And then the doctor very aggressively grabs Janeway, spins her around, says, neither am I. And he screams at her, super aggressive. And yes, so this is another.
They're both really emotional here.
Yes.
I didn't understand why the doctor was quite so emotional. And I certainly didn't understand at this point why Janeway was so emotional.
Well, and no one has grabbed the captain like that ever, unless it was Chakotay, possibly. But it was a little crazy, I think.
But again, I will defend it by saying a lot of these scenes in this episode are so emotionally vapid because you've got Borgs talking to Borgs about non-feelings that I was grateful for some emotion.
So this fed your soul.
I was like,
scene, you're like,
it makes no sense, but thank you.
Even Kate's reaction, she was like, whoa, when she got grabbed, she was a little shocked too.
It was all over the map this episode. It was just, it was either flat and lacking emotion or melodramatic.
Or way
and too
much. And again, you know, if your director is half one foot in a sick bed and the other foot trying to direct, this is the
maybe is the that's what, okay. I don't remember that. I remember him being like that before when he directed, but I don't know for certain this was that episode, but it feels like it could be for sure.
Yeah.
Go to sick bay. Yeah. Neelix is playing with his whiskers at the top, which I love. we see a reflection shot of Seven in the game board playing Kata's Kot. I like the reflection shot. That was pretty cool.
I like that too.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad you like something.
I did. Not a lot, but
Janeway and the doctor arrive with the news that the salvage node failed in the simulations, and the doctor is researching alternative treatments, and Harry and B'Elanna are going to try to repair the faulty node using components from Seven's alcove. And I love her response, they'll fail. It's like, there's no way. And she asks to return to duties. Seven wants to work. She doesn't want to stay in sick bay. And Janeway says, I have to defer to the doctor, and the doctor definitely will not allow it.
Nope.
Seven's got to stay on that clamshell bed for as long as it takes.
But the doctor says, I'll ask each of if he can bring your work here.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
So this is where we go back to the hall. Each arrives in sickbay. Another shot from behind the character.
Yes, but before that, we have yet another exterior space shot of Voyager. So
oh, we do.
Then, yeah. Yes, and then each of enters the empty sickbay.
And again, this, we're behind him. So yes. I just kept seeing the same.
Yeah, the same kind type of shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Over and over again.
Seven's gone. There's no doctor around. Ichab reactivates him, and the doctor is in the middle of a sentence, comes back like in the middle of an argument that he was having with Seven. And we realize she deactivated him in the middle of them of an argument.
In the middle of a sentence. Yeah. I mean, he's because all you hear him say is forced to sedate you is all you hear him say. But then I started questioning, is that how it works? If you shut off the program, doesn't it that the next time you turn it on, doesn't it reactivate where he's supposed to say, please state the nature of the medical emergency? Doesn't he just go back to his, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just odd that I felt like it was a forced bit of a comedy, you know, mm-hmm. they kind of felt like, oh, we'll just do this. Like as if he was cut off in the middle of it. But I just I feel like that flow chart doesn't really work that way. So yeah,
another deduction for this episode.
Ichab asked the computer to locate Seven, and the computer says that she is in sickbay. Then we have a nice cool shot of a out of focus doctor and out of focus Ichab, but a very in focused com badge of Seven mm-hmm. of Nine sitting on top of one of the consoles.
But again, is that how it works? The computer can only locate you if your com badge is there?
Yeah, shouldn't have located you according to your bio
signature. BIOS readings. That's a bad computer. That's like oh, if I turn my cell phone off, you can't find me. Sure, in our world, but in Star Trek world, it should be able
to
scan the halls and the places and tell what kind of life signs or bio signs are there. It just it doesn't seem like we're still just tracking cell phones.
Robbie, I don't think you or myself would have ever thought in a million years before filming this podcast that you would ever say that our computer was bad. That was a bad computer.
That was a bad computer.
Bad computer. Bad computer.
We go to engineering. We're upstairs.
Yes. Torres is harboring the fugitive formerly known as Annika Hansen.
Yes.
Right? Okay. Sorry. That's what I wrote as my descriptive.
Torres comes up the elevator, finds her, is like, there you are. The doctor's looking for you. Mm-hmm. But Torres basically says, I'm not going to give you up. I'm going to cover. Yeah. You know, I've wanted to escape the doctor from sickbay before myself. So I get it. And by the way, again, Torres is in the foreground pushing some buttons on a panel where Seven is standing behind her. We see the angle of that panel.
Yeah.
But Torres is pushing some buttons, standing sideways with her back to Seven.
Yeah.
Talking and looking up at a monitor as if she's watching a monitor, right?
Right.
But when we cut around to the other angle and she's walking away, there was no monitor there.
Oh, no.
I felt like David just said, hi, press some buttons and you look, know, you'll up. Look over here.
Yeah.
But which is fine if you want to do that if you never show that there's no monitor.
Yeah.
But when you cut around to the reverse and you realize there's no monitor there, it's just a forced piece of blocking for a shot that. I don't know.
And Olympic judge Robert McNeil from Vancouver takes another 0.1 from the points
another
total
deductions,
of this episode. Gone.
Yes.
All right. Yes. So, but still, I mean, there's a question from Seven to Torres if she believes in Stovacor, the idea of an afterlife for Klingons, and there now ensues this deep existential conversation between Torres
life after
and,
death
and Seven, and we learn that, you know, from Seven that the Borg have no concept of afterlife, that a drone is deactivated, and when that happens the memories of that drone continue to reside in
the collective
consciousness. So as long as the Hive is in existence, so as long as there are Borg, there will be part of that drone that still exists, the memories.
So it's they will remember the experience of that drone, which plays out later on. You know, she talks about that later on. But here Torres says, when she's asked about an afterlife, she says, well, that's a big question, but I hope, basically she says, I hope so.
Yeah.
Didn't B'Elanna go to the barge of the dead and like have this existential experience that there she is? Did. So why is she saying, I hope so? Why wouldn't she say, yes, I do believe? It just, it doesn't track. It didn't track episodes we've done.
Yet another deduction. Okay.
Deduction.
I got it. Deduction. The doctor shows up and it's so funny looking at him in the lower level, since they're in the upper level of engineering, he just looks at, to me, it looks like he is the same as he was in that one episode where he got shrunk down into like 3 inches. Yeah. So he just looked tiny.
Yeah. I did like when the doctor appears, he goes, oh, of course it was Bologna. Of course it was Torres. And I was like, yeah, that's my girl. She's a rebel. She's a rebel hiding out the fugitive.
Yeah. Torres covers for Seven. I did like that moment. And basically the doctor gives in. He says that she can stay for as long as she wants, as long as she wears a cortical monitor. Okay. So
he tosses it 20 feet through the air.
He does.
Because somebody wanted to stage it with the doctor downstairs and them upstairs. It made no sense. You would not toss.
No.
I wouldn't even throw my cell phone from down below.
Fine. So another point deduction there. Deduction. But my point deduction, and I've been pretty positive about this episode throughout. My point deduction happens basically when he walks in, because he's holding a case which has the cortical monitor. He's trying to find her to bring her back to sick bay.
Why but he's would prepared.
I guess he's prepared. I guess he thought about, oh, this is all the possible outcomes, and I'm going to go ahead and take. But to me, I felt like, it's a little forced to me. So
agreed. That bugged me.
Cargo bay, Seven arrives to give each of the news that Janeway will administer the entrance exam for Starfleet Academy, and that she has compiled a list of people to help him prepare, because sure enough, when she passes on, if she can't make it, which she thinks she's not going to make it, that there's going to be a void there for people to help Icheb get prepared for this exam. She mentions Torres, Kim, and it ends in a little bit of an argument, you know, because Icheb's really emotional, and he's basically saying that she's given up. And he says, you may have given up, but I haven't. And he storms out. He's just gone. Mm-hmm. He's angry.
A couple of comments on, so she's made this list of people to help him with the Starfleet Academy entrance exam. Torres is very well versed in warp mechanics, she says. And then she goes, Harry claims to have aced the quantum theory section.
Yeah.
I was like, well, that's a backhanded compliment.
Yeah, it's a
very
dig.
Sarcastic.
It's
yeah, he claims to have aced it.
Yeah, but I don't really believe Harry.
And then Egypt says, well, I need you to help me in astrometrics. And she says, oh, Paris will help you. And he goes, I would rather not. I'd rather have you. I was like, what's wrong with Paris helping you? Like, he insulted you.
Yeah,
like, he insulted me.
Yeah.
I did not like this scene. Deduction.
No, you're right. It's another deduction.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
At the end, he says, well, maybe you've given up, but I haven't
given up.
And he storms out towards the door. And I was like, oh, my God, he's going to run into that door. They better open it. Open it. And then at the last second,
it opened.
They opened the door. I was very impressed that he had that much trust, because he was inches away from running into the door, which we all did at some point.
Right. Will Toms could have been eating In-N-Out Burger at that exact moment. So he's very lucky.
Yeah, it was a close call. Close call.
Okay, we have yet another exterior space shot of Voyager after he storms out. And now we're in astrometrics, where Icheb is analyzing something, which we later
learn. Looks like DNA.
It's just, these are Seven's medical records and what's been going on with her. Mm-hmm. And he has this moment of, like, you know, clarity, where he's like, oh, my gosh, this is it. I've got it. By George, I've got it. And so he runs to sick bay, and he basically barges in telling the doctor he's got the explanation of how to solve the problem of Seven of Nine. And he says that he will give his no to Seven. And the doctor is like, absolutely not. Because the doctor believes, you give your no up, you die, is what's happening. And, you know, Icheb
says,
trying to convince
I've done all this research. Yeah. I've researched this.
I can survive. I'm younger. I have the ability to survive without the note. I know I could do this.
Yeah, he says, you told me I didn't. I came out of my maturation chamber early. So I'm not as dependent on these Borg implants.
Exactly.
And I'm younger.
Right.
So the genetic resequencing will allow me to adapt.
Right. And he does come up with the argument that after doing all the numbers, it's an 86.9% chance that Seven's implants will adapt to his node. And the doctor's like, what? 86%? 86.9% is again, to the doctor, not a good enough percentage. Mm-hmm. But for each ep, he's fine with it. He's good with it.
Mm-hmm. We go back to Astrometrics, and Seven is looking at like a slideshow. She's like Googling.
She is.
The images Grand Canyon.
Of Earth. Yeah.
Yeah. She's looking at the Grand Canyon. Yeah. Janeway comes in, calls it a dusty hole in the ground or something. She said, I prefer farm country. And Seven says, oh, yes, you're from Bloomington.
Which is not dusty? Okay.
Anyway. Yeah. You're from Bloomington. You've talked about it quite a few times, she says.
So she brings up a picture of Bloomington too.
Yes. And Janeway says, she'll take you there. You know, I'll take you there when we get back to Earth. Seven says, I've accepted that I am not going to make it back with you. Janeway says, no, you've still got a chance. And that Janeway says, if I had listened to the odds of us making it after we got lost in the Delta Quadrant, we'd be, you know, living on some M-class planet somewhere.
Right.
And I didn't settle for that. I didn't accept it. And now we're more than halfway home. And
is this Seven, when she brings up the list?
She brings up a casualty list. She says, yes, maybe you'll make it home, but there's many who have died. She starts talking about the crew members who've died.
Yeah.
Rude, rude, rude.
Yeah. Janeway is like, where are you taking this? What is your line of reasoning? What are you trying to, what's your point? What is your point? And it's very, it comes off as rude.
Comes off as rude.
She's basically trying to say
that
Janeway will have a more difficult time accepting her death compared to the deaths of these other crew members because Seven has not lived up to Janeway's expectations. And Janeway at that point is like, no.
She corrects her. She says, no, you have
exceeded
expectations.
And she gets teary eyed. She starts tears starts to well up and everything. And
she says, if I'm upset, it's not because you didn't live up to my expectations. It's because I'm losing a friend.
Yeah.
And this is all this writing. I was just like, where did this come from? Are they, I don't know. It's really unearned, in my opinion, all of this. Although Kate did a great job at selling the words she was given. The push-in was nice here from David. It was well done, but I didn't buy this story. I just didn't buy it.
Yeah. So at this point, the doctor hails them and he says he has information. And now everybody's in the briefing room. Mm-hmm. And now he's filling them in about what each ep has come up with. And Seven turns down the procedure. She says, essentially, if there's any percentage chance that each ep could be harmed, I'm not down for this plan.
Yeah.
And she says, I want to go back to sick bay. And the doctor escorts her out. Each ep is left there in the briefing room with Janeway. And she says, you're the captain. You can order her to do this. And Janeway says, no, it's her free will. She has to decide on her own. I can't order her to do this. But there's a very frustrated Icheb in this scene. We're now in sickbay, and the doctor is helping Seven back onto the biobed, the clamshell biobed. And Icheb now hails the doctor to report to the cargo bay. So now the doctor is thinking, oh my gosh, what's going on? Seven's like, wow, he's persistent. And so the doctor leaves. And as he's leaving and he's walking down the corridor, he bumps into Janeway, who has also been hailed by Icheb separately to head to the cargo bay. They don't know what's happening. They get there, the doors open, and they just have this look of shock on their face. Icheb is sort of draped over his alcove, and he's just not in good shape. He has basically disconnected his node. So he's nodeless right now, nodeless in Seattle. And, you know, he's not in good shape. But the next shot, it's interesting because we start in sick bay, but we see Icheb, Janeway, and the doctor beam in, correct? Isn't that what happens?
Yep.
So they beam in, and Seven's like, what are you doing here? And this huge argument ensues between Icheb and Seven. Basically, at the very end of this argument, we have Janeway saying that he's not a kid. He's a man now. And his arguments are valid.
Yeah, he is adapting, the doctor says. Not totally. Not all of his implants are adapting, but he is.
And Egypt says, well, you can do this resequencing thing that I told you about earlier. So he says that. The operation does ensue. We have a nice little, it's not a montage, but definitely it's just, you know, without dialogue.
It's kind of a montage. It's the doctor, Paris is helping again. We have two beds. Okay. This is where we see the insert of Paris's hand with a wedding ring.
Did you catch that, or did Rebecca catch that? I caught that. Okay. All right.
This is where I felt like this definitely should have been like low lights and aprons and masks. And he even takes the old cortical or one of the cortical nodes out And he sets it like on a tray that looks like it's got a phaser and a tricorder and like tool. I'm like,
well, no, he just tosses it. He just drops it onto that tray. Exactly.
It's just not medically legit.
You're going to have a separate little bowl, steel, metallic, stainless steel bowl that you drop that damaged one in. Right.
Yeah.
Because it's also probably going to be toxic or whatever. So you're going to move it aside. But yes, you're right. The only thing different about this procedure is that there were new blankets. Those blankets on the, I've never seen those blankets before. I guess those are the surgery blankets to make it look more serious and more professional.
So. And they did have the two beds that were sort of angled together.
Yes, where their heads were next to each other.
That was a little different. But we do this montage. Mm-hmm. It's a long montage, which again, could have used a little more medical legitimacy.
Sure.
But we transition to cargo bay and Seven wakes up. And the doctor and Janeway fill her in that it is working. The surgery went well. It's been 6 days.
And just to quickly pause you there, and right before we go to the cargo bay, we have yet another exterior space shot of Voyager, this time flying away from us. Okay.
Yes.
Go ahead with Seven.
So many flybys. But yeah, it's working. It's been 6 days.
6 days regeneration cycle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We go to sick bay now, and Ichab is there, but he's recovering much slower than she is. So Seven, it worked pretty well for Seven. She's back at it, but Ichab is going to take a little longer.
Yeah. The doctor does revive him, and he looks up and he says, he sees Seven. He's very pleased. Mm-hmm. He says, what was his term? He said, he didn't say you've healed. He said, you've something. Anyway, he says, you're better, basically. Yeah. And she says that she's going to help him prepare for the astrometrics portion of the exam. Mm-hmm. And he's like, he's moved, which then moves her. And now
she's crying again.
Yeah, she's now crying again. And
he says, like, your ocular implant is malfunctioning again.
And the doctor scans her from behind.
Yeah, he scans her.
And he's like, oh no, there's no glitch here. She's really crying. So there you go. Seven finds emotion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There you go.
What's your lesson?
Thank God that episode's over.
What's your lesson?
My lesson, and it's a good lesson, is let others help you.
Yes.
Like, let people help you. That was Seven's lesson is.
Yeah.
She didn't want help. And, you know, I think Ichab talks about it when he's trying to argue for her to let him help. He reminds her that everybody on Voyager helps each other when they can. And that's how this ship works, people helping each other. And he told her, you would want to help if you saw other crew members in danger, even if there was risks, you would want to help. So that's my lesson in this episode is taking care of each other. Mm-hmm. But we should all take care of each other, and we should all be open to letting people help us when we need it. So what about you?
Multiple lessons. So yes, allow other people to help. So in a line with your lesson, don't try to do everything on your own. And that was from Seven, not allowing anyone to help her. But it was also from Janeway in the beginning, trying to go on that away mission in the Delta Flyer on her own, again, not allowing anyone to help her. And my other lesson number two is don't take things personally. In that line when the doctor says to Ichab, she's not angry at you. She's just angry. And I think this is something that I struggle with a lot because I'm a people pleaser. I want people to be happy around me. And when someone's angry, I typically think that they're angry or upset because of something that I did. But a lot of times it's not. It's about something that happened in their day. It has nothing to do with you at all. And I think that's a wonderful lesson for people when they're interacting in public with other individuals. If someone's salty and saucy and sassy with you, or angry or pissy, just remember something happened in their life that they're dealing with. It's not you. Don't let yourself get all worked up about it.
Yeah.
Waste of energy, really is. You got one person upset. You don't need a second person upset for no reason.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And my third lesson is crying is nothing to be ashamed of. Mm-hmm. And I say that because when I was growing up, a lot of times, I remember when I was 7, 8, or 9 years old, I would cry about something. And my mom was like, boys don't cry. And that was something that came out of some parents, they would believe that like boys should be, non-crying human beings, but we're all filled with emotions.
Those are real emotions. Yeah. And everybody should be encouraged to to feel what you really feel them, and not be ashamed of it. Yeah. Not be ashamed of anything you feel.
All right. So I'm going to give my rating first because I know that yours is going to be really poopy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So my rating for this episode is 7.9.
Are you insane?
I actually lowered it because of how mad you are about this episode.
Oh my God. Okay.
All right, what's yours? What's yours?
I've raised mine a little.
I know you raise it because you don't want to give it what you really feel. And I know, would you have given this a zero? Would you have given this episode a zero?
No, I never would give it a zero. Okay, because give me your lowest.
Three.
Rating. I give it a three.
Okay, fine.
I give this a three.
Okay, so 3 and 8. The average between us is basically around 5 point something. So let's see what that is.
I don't have it written on a piece of paper this time. It is messaged to
me.
And yes, the average rating for this episode is 7.3.
Oh.
So I'm way below it.
You're so
I'm a
below.
Three.
Oh my gosh.
This is, I'm way off.
My original rating was 8.0.
Wow.
Actually. Yeah.
7.3. So most people like this episode pretty well.
They did. But man, you were super sleuthing this one. You caught so many things. I didn't even notice them. And you were just, it's so funny because every single thing that you saw, you became more and more just not happy with
outraged.
This episode. Outraged. Yes. Like you.
Deduction.
It's almost like you felt like you have just wasted a day watching this episode and making notes on this. Like, why did I even wake up today to do
not
this?
Good.
Wow.
Not good.
Okay.
And I'm sure part of my frustration is we're starting season 7. We had a big Borg two-parter. And the fact that I know they moved this up primarily because it's a Borg story and they think somehow that magically makes a better episode than other episodes.
Yeah.
I resent that.
You're offended by that.
I think Neelix can make a great episode of television as a character and he doesn't have to do anything Borg. And Harry can do the same. And Tom or B'Elanna or Tuvok, they can all do the same. So to move this episode up, in spite of the continuity errors, blatant continuity errors that are exposed, and think that if it were a great episode, I'd say, sure, do it. But it's not. It's not a great episode, I don't think. So anyway, that's part of why I'm fueled with frustration about it, because they moved this up for no other reason than it's just a Borg episode. And that doesn't make a good episode, just simply because it talks about Borg. So that's my thoughts there.
Okay. All right. That's fine.
But the world is not fair.
No, it's not.
And we don't all feel the same about
maybe that's another lesson from this episode. Overall, the world is not fair.
The world is not fair, and I don't make the rules, and my ratings don't really mean anything. So
I just hope you don't get too much hate mail.
I know.
Or hate emails.
That's all right.
Okay.
I'm tough.
All right, everyone. Thank you for joining our recap and discussion of this episode, Imperfection, which was definitely an imperfect episode for Robert Duncan McNeil. And join us next week for hopefully an episode that Robbie will actually smile about. And I think he will, because it is the episode Drive, which, in my opinion, some of the best uniforms in Starfleet.
Oh, ever. Those are those white uniforms?
Yes.
Oh, this is
the episode.
Those.
Yes. So here we go. All right. Join us for that episode. Thank you, everyone. See you next week. For the Patreon patrons that are tuning in, please stay tuned for your bonus material.
Thanks, everybody.
See ya.